On the spot. Dot.
On the spot.
PG-13 in our theater,
so I had no desire to see it, but honestly, it worked out very well.
The movie was actually originally called God Party.
5 stars. I'm going to say 1 star. I will never see it again, and I feel bad for those who spent their money to go see it in the first place. Everybody, welcome back to another episode of Thought on the Spot Movie Reviews. My name is Tommy, and today we have another guest on the show.
Hi, I'm Tommy. Can you hear me?
Yeah, I can hear you. Do you want to introduce yourself?
Yeah, so hi, I'm Tommy. I love movies, and I'm excited to be here.
Well, thanks for coming on to the show. Hey, so today we're going to be reviewing Knives Out, right?
Yes. Very exciting. I've been looking forward to this film as soon as I saw the first trailer for it. So, very exciting to finally get to see it. And we got to see it in an early showing.
We did. So, truth be told, this movie does not come out until November 27th. We were able to view this last night as kind of like an early screening.
Yeah. They were running a promotion and they gave out a little card that said, "Hey, you get to come celebrate Harlan's birthday." So it was kind of fun. A little exclusive club there.
Kind of a surprise. We just thought we were lucky to get into it early, right?
Exactly.
Well, Knives Out is a comedy crime drama, more of a whodunit. The rating is PG-13 and the runtime is 2 hours and 10 minutes. Knives Out is directed by Rian Johnson, who is one of my favorite films of his was Looper.
Yes, and he also has done some other films, including Last Jedi, which came out last year, was the 8th film in the Star Wars universe.
Yeah, a super... Super excited for the last one coming out next month, though, right?
I know! I am so excited. I have... already bought my tickets, and I might be going to do the whole marathon, but that's another story for another day.
Yeah, no, I'm kind of jealous that you're doing it, but that's awesome. I am happy that Rian Johnson is not doing this one. I did not like his Star Wars.
Yes, and I am a horrible Star Wars fan because I have not seen it yet, but
no.
I will let you know what my opinion is next month after I see it. It came out while I was out of the country and I didn't get a chance to see it. And then I came back and everyone was having mixed feelings about it and I didn't get a chance to see it while it's still in theaters. So I just decided to wait. And now I get to see it in theaters, which...
Wow. You didn't miss much. All right, so let's talk about the cast. Leading the cast, but first we have Daniel Craig, who plays Benoit Blanc. Daniel's played in such films as he's the Bond movies, right? He is James Bond.
He is he's iconic. He definitely brings a unique film or a unique feeling to James Bond. He's a little rough around the edges. And in Knives Out, he's comes across as a little bit of a fool, but he's really way smarter than I think people give him credit for, which is kind of fun to watch him play something like that.
Right. We also have Chris Evans, who plays Ransom Drysdale. You'd recognize Chris from the Marvel Universe movies, where he's played a Captain America and Steve Rogers. Any films that you recognize Chris Evans from?
I did see his film that he actually directed last year. It was called Before We Go, a couple of years ago. He starred and directed in it. It was a sweet little piece. He's done some other films, playing pool. So he kind of came up in the rom-com, but... He played another comic book hero when he played Johnny Storm in Fantastic Four, way back in the day. So he's got a long, beautiful history in
right. We also got Ana de Armas, who plays Marta Cabrera. Ana de Armas is known for, she's played in Blade Runner 2049, where she plays Joy. Anything that you recognized Ana de Armas from?
I didn't. This felt like the first time I really saw her in, but I am definitely going to keep my eye out for her in future things. And just looking at her IMDb, there's some things that definitely intrigue me. She is a Cuban actress, and she is going to be with Daniel Craig in the next James Bond film that's comes out next year.
Yes, I did see that as well. Well, she actually played also in The Informer as Sophia Hoffman. So she has a little bit of history, but not a huge, not a lot of acting career just yet, but it looks like she's up and coming.
So. Yeah.
Next, we have Jamie Lee Curtis, who plays Linda Drysdale. I recognize Jamie from such the Halloween franchise, where she's played Laurie Strode.
Oh yeah, she's she's the iconic screen queen, but she's done so much stuff. I loved her in True Lies, of course. Freaky Friday is a classic. She's just, you know. One of the sad things that sometimes happens with actors that get older is they kind of lose relevancy. And I think she has done a fantastic job of, you know, not only, you know, I know she kind of disappeared from the scene for a while, but she's come back, and she has come back with a vengeance. She's been starring in she was in the television series Scream Queens, which was fun. She's had lots of television guest star appearances, and you know, she has revived her role as Laurie Strode in the new Halloween stuff. Playing that same character. Yeah. So yeah.
All right. Next, we have Michael Shannon, who plays Walt Thromby. Michael Shannon, you recognize from Take Shelter, where he plays Curtis, and also The Shape of the Water, where he plays Richard Strickland, kind of the bad guy in that movie. Any of my favorite Michael Shannon films that you've seen, Tammy?
So I went through and I looked, and I know I've seen him in stuff. He's done Batman, some DC comics, Batman versus Superman, and the other he played General Zod. He's done some other things, but he didn't quite stand out to me, and so now I need to go back and rewatch those and be like, because sometimes you see somebody but they don't necessarily catch on the radar, and then you're like, notice them, and then you're like, oh, I must go see everything else they've ever done. So He was fun in that.
Yeah, I can't remember the name of the movie, but I remember one where he's like, I think they're flipping houses or something like that, and he hires this kid, brings him on. That's really good. I cannot remember the movie though, but yeah, he's a good actor.
I do remember Bug. If you saw it way back 2006, he was with Ashley Judd. And that was a real psychological thriller that was very disturbing. And I remember, like, I didn't remember that it was him. I certainly remembered Ashley Judd, but just that line of being blurred, the line of reality being blurred. And I remember the male actor, you know, I didn't remember him specifically, but I want to go watch it again now. So. Other things.
No, I really love that movie. I remember seeing it and thinking the whole time, you know, oh, were there bugs in this film? And then I met someone who knew a meth addict, and they were like, that's what it's like for them. So it's a crazy movie. If you haven't seen it, definitely check it out. Another film I was mentioning is 99 Homes. So if you're interested in seeing that, it's also It's also out there. Our next person in the cast, and by the way, this goes for a second because this is an all-star, you know, cast that we have here, top of the line actors, but is Don Johnson, who plays Richard Drysdale. You'd recognize Don from the original Miami Vice, where he played Detective James Crockett. He's also in Django Unchained, where he plays Big Daddy. Any big Don Johnson films for you, Tammy?
Just kind of refreshing my memory. I remember Nash Bridges. Like, I remember that. I definitely remember him more for television than I do for movies. But there's a certain smarminess that he has, and he plays really well. And he had a little bit of that in this, that just, you're just like, yeah, I don't like you, but he plays it really well. So that was when people
can embrace
that. I do want to see the new Watchmen. I haven't had a chance to see that yet, the new series. So,
oh, is he in that? I did not know that.
So, there's, again, not enough hours in the day. I would have to not have a job to watch everything that I want to see.
And I've heard good things about the new Watchmen. And what's also crazy is Dakota Johnson is his daughter, which is kind of interesting, right?
Is she? Really? Mm-hmm.
The girl from 50 Shades is his daughter. Yeah.
Oh, Dakota. Yes. Yes, I know. Yes. And married to
Melanie Griffith.
Yes. For a second, I was thinking of somebody else. I was thinking of Dakota Fanning for a second. I'm like, wait, what? No. Yes, I remember. You know how sometimes the name, you say a name and the wrong face comes first? That's where I went. But yes, it is interesting. So his daughter is definitely doing some interesting things too.
Next on the list, we have Toni Collette, who plays Joni Thrombey. Toni, you recognize from Little Miss Sunshine, where she plays Cheryl Hoover, the mom. Also recently in Hereditary, where she plays Annie. Any standouts for you on Toni?
Oh, everything I've ever seen her in, I have loved. And I know that we had this discussion that you were like, she's not who my favorite is. But the very first thing I ever saw her in, way back in the day, let's see, when did it come out, was Muriel's Wedding, clear back when she was strictly in 1994. That's how long ago it was. And I remember she just had this standout performance. She just, you know, was a lot of fun, and I've enjoyed seeing her in a lot of different things. She's kind of a chameleon. I mean, she was in Sixth Sense too. She was the mom, and just, yeah, there's a ton of stuff that she's done over the years. So
yeah, she's definitely unique. Not my favorite, but a lot of people seem to like her. So
well, you know, not every actor or actress is going to be everybody else's favorite. You know, right. There are people that people are like, oh yeah, I love them. And I'm like, I'm more proud of you. You know, so yeah. You don't have to like everybody.
No, just does a lot though. So next we have Lakeith Stanfield, who plays Lieutenant Elliot. Lakeith, you'd recognize from Sorry to Bother You, where he plays Cassius Green, and Selma, where he played Jimmy Lee Jackson. Anything else that you recognize Lakeith from? I don't think he had quite a lot that he had played.
No, but he was in Random Acts of Flyness, which was a series on HBO by Terrence Nance, and Terrence Nance was one of the advisors at my film school. Just a fun side note there. So he's a pretty cool guy. Anyway, just for fun, if you wanted to know, you know, weird and random.
A little bit of Six Degrees there. Is that what that is? Yeah. All right. Next, we have Christopher Plummer, who plays Harlan Thrombey. Christopher Plummer, you'd recognize in Beginners, where he plays Hal, as well as A Beautiful Mind, where he plays Dr. Rosen.
Sound of Music, where he plays Captain Von Trapp? Hello. Like that scene where he's the dad of seven children. And, you know, oh my gosh. And then, you know, there's the song that he sings with Julie Andrews, and they're, you know, falling in love, and they're both beautiful people. Sorry. He was really hot back in the day. Just saying. He was also in Girl with a Dragon Tattoo. So, done some interesting things over the years.
Oh yeah, he's definitely been around.
Wide range of roles. Anyway.
How old is he anyway? Let's see. 1929 is when he was born. What does that put him at?
90 this year, I think. Jeez. Yeah, because in 10 years, if he was born in 29.
Right. Wow.
Next year, it'll be 100 years. That's
and
crazy.
He's holding it well in this movie, right? You don't, like I would say 80-ish in the movie, which I don't know. 75-ish even maybe.
Well, it's his 85th birthday in the show.
Is he
celebrating? But he looks freaking amazing, and he's still got, you know, I mean, he's not, you know, he's 90 years old, but he's not frail like some people could potentially be. You know, you look at them and you're like, oh, please don't fall over. I don't want to break every bone in your body, you know. He definitely still has that bit of a spring in his step that was really fun to see in this.
Yeah. Well, it's like, it's, you know, it's him and like Donald Sutherland, right? Like, you're just like, holy crap, that guy is still acting.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. How old is Donald Sutherland? Now I feel like I need to look this up.
He was born in 1935, so he's actually younger than Plummer. I would say Plummer looks younger than him.
Oh, absolutely. There's some things that Donald Sutherland, in certain ways, has not aged as well. But he's still also a very awesome actor. So, anyway.
Right.
Sorry. We digress.
All right, so next in our cast, we have Catherine Langford, who plays Meg Thrombey. You recognize Catherine from Love, Simon, where she plays Leah, and 12 Reasons Why, the Netflix series, where she plays Hannah Baker.
In 13 Reasons Why, isn't she the lead? Yes, it's her suicide that sets off the entire...
Spoiler. Spoiler. No, just kidding. Yeah.
Like, you don't know that going into watching it. Yeah.
Yeah. So she's up and coming, right? Like, it seems like that she's kind of starting to make a name for herself a little bit.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Thanks. And what were you going to say?
Nothing.
next, we have Frank Oz, who plays Alan Stevens. Now, interesting with Frank Oz, Frank is actually in the film, but you'd recognize him from the voice of Yoda in all the Star Wars films, as well as the voice of Miss Piggy and Fozzie Bear in the Muppets. So we get live action Frank Oz in here playing Alan Stevens.
Yeah, which is awesome, you know, because he's such an iconic voice actor. To then see him see him in person is just awesome. It just gives you warm fuzzies thinking about it.
It does. I swear he's done puppets for other movies as well. Like, he's just done so much work in the background.
A lot of voice stuff on Sesame Street, Bert, Grover, Cookie Monster. He did Inside Out as a voice. Zathura. I don't know that one. Monsters, Inc. So, I mean, he's
He's been around.
He was even in Blues Brothers 2000.
Yeah, he was. I think he was actually himself in that one. So, but I mean, still, he's been in a lot of stuff. I had never seen him in person, so it was kind of exciting to see that and make that relation.
Yeah.
And again, you have to wonder.
Yeah.
What were you gonna say?
Oh, sometimes like we love these voice actors, but we don't always get to see them, and so it is always exciting, you know, to actually put a face to the name, you know. And some voice actors started, you know, if you think about, what's this bucket? He's been done the voice in every single Pixar film. John Ratzenberger, you know, he was on Cheers. So I grew up, I knew who he was, but then he's just done all of this Pixar voice acting, you know? And so his is kind of the reverse. I grew up listening to all of his characters, and then put a face to his name is just kind of fun.
Exactly. It's the Mark Hamill effect, right? We all love Luke Skywalker, but we also love the Joker.
Exactly. Exactly. And all of the other voice stuff that he did over the years. So.
Well, so that's everyone that I had listed for the cast. Was there anyone that I missed that you wanted to mention?
No, but one thing that I did like to see is that Ryan, the director, casts the same people. They might not always be a lead actor, but it's fun to see them in smaller parts, and they're cast over and over and over again as character actors. And I as a writer director myself, I love working with those same people that you build that relationship with, you know, because in film you don't always, you know, you work for just a short time with people and then you go to the next project, you know, and might not see that same person, you know. So when you get to see those relationships being built, it's just a really cool thing in that industry.
I agree 100%. And that's what I thought of when I saw Frank Oz, is I was like, how did he get that guy? And I'm like, duh, Star Wars, of course, you know? And so I'm sure he's just making those relationships through there.
Exactly. Exactly.
Well, that is our cast then. One thing to call out is as we were sitting in the theater, right, we're looking at the credits. I'm just kind of just glazing over it, realizing all these big name actors that are in this film. And then it gets to the bottom and it mentions Joseph Gordon-Levitt, who's played apparently a sheriff. And I kept thinking back. I couldn't remember seeing him anywhere. It was really like nagging me. And I'd asked you, did you see him? Because his name's obviously there. And we were trying to think about, like, where could we have seen him? Where would he been placed? You know, those kinds of things, right?
Uh-huh.
So I found an article on Cinema Blend where they did do an interview with Ryan. And he says Joseph Gordon-Levitt is in Knives Out, but it's a hidden cameo. He says that you will never see him, but if you know his voice, you'll hear it if you listen closely.
Oh, okay. So that means that watching it again is, you know, going to be, you know. I always like watching things a second time or a third time, depending on how I feel about the film. And catching all of those little things that are put in the film. The director, the writers, and the actors all bring to a role. So I'll have to check it out.
Exactly. Well, and the funny thing is the reason why everyone was getting a little bit of a fuss over it is, I guess, Joseph Gordon-Levitt has played in every one of Rian Johnson's films in some capacity somewhere. So they were wondering if he was going to be in this at all. And there you go.
Interesting. See, it's that same kind of relationship building that you see in the course of an actor's career. You know, if you think about some of the, you know, those big actors. You think Harrison Ford, you think Steven Spielberg, that relationship, or you think, or George Lucas, some of those iconic roles, but we've got some of those relationships happening here. Joseph Gordon-Levitt is having that same relationship with Christopher Nolan because of his Batman stuff, but also I think he's done there was Inception, and it was the only thing I'll probably remember off the top of my head without looking more, but anyway.
Right.
So that's cool.
It talks about the kind of person
the actor is as a person, you know, that they're a nice person, so people want to continue working with them.
Yep. Sure. Yeah. I think they just kind of, they're buds, right? They probably met in schooling or in the industry and became good friends. And it's, hey, I'll help you if you help me. I think of Greg Grunberg, who was famous as Matt Parkman in Heroes. He's J.J. Abrams' friend, right? And he's been in most of J.J.'s films or shows, for that matter. So it's that relation, right? Like, I'll help you out, but you help me out too.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Cool.
So, all right. So the plot of the movie is the film circles the death of a possible murder of a patriarch of a wealthy family. Harlan Thrombey, a famous murder mystery writer, is murdered on the night of his birthday in his own home. On this evening, his entire family is visiting and stays the night on the night of his murder. It's now up to Detective Benoit Blanc, as well as the well-known private investigator, to solve this potential death.
I suspect foul play and have eliminated no suspects.
I'm Detective Lieutenant Elliot, and this is Trooper Wagner. We just want to ask a few questions. We understand the night of his demise, the family have gathered to celebrate your father's 85th birthday. How was it, by the way?
The party? Pre my dad's death? Oh, it was great.
Ladies and gentlemen, I would like to request that you all stay until the investigation is completed.
What?
Can we ask why? Has something changed?
No.
No, it hasn't changed, or no, we can't ask.
I'm gonna live till I die.
You think one of his family,
Walt,
killed? Is that what you're suggesting?
Cry. I'm gonna take
you all love twisting the knife into one another.
Up your ass.
Oh, very nice.
Matter of fact,
God.
Eat shit. How's that? Nice. Eat shit. Yes. Eat shit. Yes. Eat shit.
Smug smile.
Definitely eat shit.
Gonna dance. Gonna fly. I'm taking chance.
Something. Spill it.
I suspect foul play. And I have eliminated no suspects.
I'm gonna live until I...
It's a twisted web.
We are not finished untangling it, not yet.
What is this? CSI KFC?
Until I die!
Right, so that was the trailer. And you were right, it says right there at the very beginning, 85th birthday. I don't know why I forgot that.
There's a lot happening, and I think that sometimes details get mixed. You know, you're like, oh, it's a birthday party, but, you know, sometimes it's just all of those little details that you catch the second or third time viewing. Because right. I'm sure there was things that you caught that I missed, so, which is just how things work.
It's interesting though, because as you watch the trailer again, it's so much more relatable because you know what that point in the film is, right? And you're extracted. Like, oh, that's what that is. That's what's happening there. Interesting enough. So there's the part where you see the in the trailer the fire start in a kitchen, and if I remember right, in the film, do we see that part? Do we see when the glass hits the floor and the fire starts?
Don't remember. That's the other thing about trailers, though, is there stuff that is put into trailers that don't always end up in the film, which sometimes really sucks because you're expecting the scene and you're waiting for the scene and it never shows up, and it's the scene that would make the movie so much better, but they don't show up. So.
Well, it's like it's the same thing with Marvel's Infinity War. Everyone was upset because in the trailer you saw Hulk running across the battlefield, and then in turn what happens is actually the Hulk Buster running across.
Yeah.
So exactly. It's kind of funny. Misleading. So let's jump into the review. I have a few things to talk about. I'm sure you have a few things to talk about. And then we'll kind of end it with our score. How does that sound?
Excellent.
All right. Do you want to go first or do you want me to go first?
I'll eat first. This is your show.
All right. So, as I mentioned before, I have to say an amazing cast. It was actually kind of great to just see so many well-known faces on the big screen all together. Knowing that Rian Johnson has worked with so many of them in the past, I thought that, you know, him being where he's at right now in his career, definitely, like we talked about, having those people in his back pocket and being able to kind of throw them the script and say, what do you guys think? I really want you in this film. But saying that, also at the same time, I feel that like this film probably would not have been as good had he not got that cast involved.
Oh, I think I absolutely agree, because I think as the audience members, we have certain expectations when we see the caliber of a cast like this. We have certain expectations, and it's, you know, I think raises that anticipation level. And for me, seeing that cast like that was absolutely awesome, because we see people in all stages of all of their careers, you know, and it almost has that, what's the word I'm looking for? It's kind of a mirror effect, you know, because like, you know, just how and the impact that they have on the story and the, I don't know what I'm trying to say. Never mind. Go on.
I think it goes hand in hand with, you know, you have to have good writing and you have to have good actors, right? I think that if Tarantino couldn't get the people that he wants for his films, that he wouldn't be as good as he is. It takes that talent to carry that forward. And I think in a way, Rian does a lot of movies where it's not, or I shouldn't say a lot of movies, but he does movies where it's not super crucial that he has an all-star cast, right? And in something like this, a project like this, he knew that he had to have something like that to make it work. Otherwise, it would have been probably, I think, almost too boring.
Yeah. So as a screenwriter, so I've studied screenwriting. And one of the things that is kind of drilled into you from the very beginning is, you know that you're writing for an actor that's not necessarily super talented. Sometimes you're writing for the dialogue so that anybody could play it. And sometimes you're writing a script knowing that only one person can play it. And because they're going to be able to elevate the words on the page to that next level, you know. Not every actor could have played those lines. There was a lot of subtext happening in many of those scenes, and so there was a lot of layers, and so those actors had to play all of those layers, not just the words that are being said, but what's happening beneath the words that are being said, especially when the actors are playing, you know, when they're discussing what happened with the police officers, they've got what they're saying, and then got what really happened. And so there's, you know, we actually get to see it. That always isn't always the case. But subtext is so important, and not all actors can play subtext. So anyway, that's my two cents about subtext.
But yeah, so that was the first thing I wanted to call out. What was your first thing on your list?
It was not what I was expecting, because if you think about like her traditional whodunit, you know, if we go back to the days of like Clue or an Agatha Christie film or those mysteries, we don't know who did it. And so we have those expectations going in terms of there's certain conventions that we are expecting. And Ryan really played with those conventions and how he tweaked them in a way that then as you're watching it, you're like, oh, this is so not what I was expecting, but I thought it actually was better because of that.
Yeah, the kind of that, I almost want to say the way M. Night Shyamalan will twist the ending, he twists the way that you think that character is going to end up, right?
Exactly, yeah.
Yeah.
You know, like when we rewatched the trailer, it was like, oh yeah, so we have all of these expectations going in. And then you're like, oh, so this, it's so not what I thought. Just playing on those twists and turns of a whodunit, which writing a good whodunit is a challenge in and of itself. But because you have to have reveals happen at certain times, so the audience follows along with you. So, and those realizations that come along, you know, as an actor, they have to play those twists and turns when they become aware of something. And when you're making a film, you're not shooting it in order. And so sometimes you'll have a reveal in one way, you know, that they've played. It's like, oh, they've already had this reveal, but then they have to go back and play it before the reveal because they're shooting the scene out of order. And so I'd be curious to know Ryan's process on how he shot this and how he worked with his actors on that. I know I'm kind of looking at this from a technical standpoint, but I think a murder mystery is so technical in many ways, because some films, like if you're watching an action film, they're just trying to get certain beats, but a mystery, you're like, you have to raise that suspense level and cast doubt on all of your characters.
Yeah, no, it definitely takes a lot of planning, right? And making sure everything falls into place perfectly.
Yeah.
So, I do like the way the film starts. We don't even get any backstory. We jump right in and we see some opening scenes where, you know, the plot has thickened, right? And I liked that aspect of it. I went going into the film thinking, okay, there's going to be something that shows like maybe some back history or maybe what would be causing like motive or something like that. But no, truly what the movie's about happens right at the beginning. So we get to dive right in at the start. And I like that. I wish the pacing of that concept would have stayed throughout the film though.
Oh, I agree. There was definitely some parts where it kind of, want to keep the audience engaged, and you know, we go in, we've got that willing suspension of disbelief, and we know that we've got those reveals coming, we've got the mystery, we're trying to get drawn in. But sometimes there's that fine line between having the characters building relationships and plot versus pacing, and definitely kind of at about the two-thirds of the way, it just kind of like dragged for a while. Is it kind of almost, it just lost its momentum.
I agree. Like I started to think, don't fall asleep because you will miss a crucial part, but it did. It got kind of boring in the middle.
But thankfully, it ended on a high note. you know, once they kind of sped things back up, it really, you know, it kept plowing all the way to the end.
I agree. There's that pivotal moment where you think everything's kind of coming crashing down. You're getting to that finality of everything. And then it turns and starts picking back up again. And from that point forward, I like it again. So it's just that middle, I'd say 20 minutes, you know, and that's the thing is we've got another film where, you know, the runtime is 2 hours and 10 minutes, hour and 45, hour and 50, probably could have cut it and it would have been great.
Yeah, and it's that fine art. For a long time, theaters did not want, you know, back to the golden age of Hollywood, where they had those big epic films that were 3+ hours long. They would actually have an intermission, you know, and then we kind of changed as audience members, and so then they cut the runtimes down. And then they wanted to have the run times as short as possible so that they could have as many screenings as possible. But with the advent, I think, of the superhero films coming out, you know, some of, like Lord of the Rings, or some of those epic films that we are getting back coming in, the run times are getting longer, but that doesn't always mean better. And I think if we have that, you know, kill your babies moments, be like, okay, do we really need this scene? Is the scene advancing the plot enough? Is it, are we revealing enough? And are we dying when we get to this scene? And I think, you know, Ryan could have sat down with his editor a little bit more and said, okay, where, you know, I'm getting some feedback that my audience is kind of losing it about here. What can I take out or trim up or, you know, just to shave off even just a few minutes so that we don't have that dip in pacing.
Right. No, I agree. I think the trailer is one of the big things that everyone knows about it. In fact, if you talk to someone and say, have you seen the Knives Out trailer? One of the iconic things that they show is this big circle of knives on. It almost looks like a Crown of Thrones, but made out of knives type of thing going on. And I don't know, for me, just seeing that, I thought that the movie would reference it in some way. And although I'm sure you can agree, there's definitely an impactful moment that it's involved in, the rest of the time, it's just very knick-knacky thing in this famous writer's like house just sitting there, right?
There's a line right at the very beginning, though, that Harlan says when he's talking to the nurse, brain just died on her name.
Marta,
yeah. That he talks about, people don't know if they're real, the difference between real or fake. And so you kind of, or what's real and what's fake, something like that. I can't quite remember exact quote, but that's what plays through the entire, that's kind of their through line that they set up right at the beginning, you know? And so then you see the knives and you're always like wondering, okay, is this real or is it fake? And then it makes you wonder about, well, are they telling the truth or not? So that's getting a little meta, but I think if you catch it right at the beginning, it does help. But if you miss that line, it doesn't quite have the same impact, I think. So I could see the layers. Mm-hmm. I think it helped that I caught that scene. But if I hadn't caught that line, I would probably be saying the same thing. Oh, this looks really cool. Why is it here?
Yeah, I even think with you saying that, though, it still doesn't explain why there's a big display of knives in a circle. Like, it looks like a bullseye or something like that. And whether they're being fake or real, it's just this huge thing in the middle of his house. Like, you would think that, like, maybe I'll be honest, the one thing I could take away from it was, because he was a writer of murder mysteries, I think one of his stories was called something with knives. It wasn't Knives Out, obviously that's the name of the film, but it was like Attack of the Knives or The Knives Fly, and I thought, oh, maybe that was a prop to promote the book or something. but it's just, it's this body thing in the middle of the room, and you're just like, why the hell is that there?
Yeah. Absolutely. Yeah. I think it's one of those things where we can just, as audience members, you know, speculate on what it really means. But it still looks really cool.
Yeah, it's cool. It's what did you have?
Going back to my notes here. I walked out and I enjoyed it. I think sometimes, you know, we have, as audience members, have certain expectations, and you know, as a filmmaker, you know, I watch it on one level, but I also want to try and don't want to forget to be just allow myself to be in the moment and enjoy the film. And, you know, I got to watch some of my favorite actors of all time, and I got to, you know, experience with the audience this moment in time. And I like that. There's something to be said for that communal, you know, when we tell stories, you know, that's how culture is passed on. And I like that we can have that shared common language of filmmaking. And I liked just in general the things that there was like moments of like, oh, you know, there wasn't a lot of jump scares or anything like that. It was more of like, oh, this is interesting. Who did what, really? And I enjoyed trying to, you know, because of the nature of the mystery, I liked trying to figure out and be ahead of what's going on. And sometimes I felt like I was, and sometimes I'm like, oh, did I miss something? Anyway, I enjoyed it. I thought it was fun. It was, they had some interesting pop culture references in there that were enjoyable and made me laugh as well. Especially
With Chris Evans' character or the little kid?
The little kid. There was some moments of were just fun that really called out some of the cultural things that are happening in society today. And it was interesting to see that play out in their family.
Everyone has the same type of problems, no matter how rich you are, right?
Exactly. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, that is everything I had to go over as part of the film in my review. Was there anything else that you wanted to cover?
No, I think that's it. I think we talked about a lot of cool things. Again, the cast was a lot of fun. I think that really made the film for me in a lot of ways. Just watching, you know, how they put together, you know, because all of the filmmaking lately, those movies that I've seen in theaters have, you know, been action, blockbuster. And so it's nice to see something that's a little different in tone and, you know, a little bit more thought-provoking, which is always fun.
Yeah, in a way, it kind of reminded me of that remake of the Murder on the Orient Express. You know, another film that we had a huge cast with, some good writing. Obviously, Murder on the Orient Express is a very well-known story. So you can... Yeah, you can really, you know, tune that up, make it really nice. And I think Ryan did a really good job having, you know, a murder mystery storyline and having that polished look to it. Again, the only gripe I would have would be just the runtime. It just ran just a little bit too long. And we've talked, you and I, back and forth about the pacing of such films, that both of us were reminded of Clue through this movie. But Clue just had that different pacing. It carried it a little bit more frantically. And maybe that's something that we missed here, keeping that ball rolling or something.
Yeah, definitely. Clue is definitely more of a comedy. You know, Knives Out has comedic moments. You know, Clue, I think, has that slapstick comedy element. And so with that, the pacing has to be fast. And, you know, maybe if they had done added a little bit of that franticness instead of this kind of it was almost like he was lollygagging around. And so that kind of, you know, Benoit character, he really needed to be pushing it a little bit more, I think. But at the same time, there were some cool character moments. I did actually like the scene where he was with the grandma and he's like, I'll be happy to sit with you for a while, you know. But that was a moment that kind of slowed the film, kind of slowed the pacing of the film too. It was a great character moment, but you don't want to sacrifice great character moments for pacing and, you know, losing your audience.
Agreed. I think that he could have even gotten away with telling, you know, one of the other officers, hey, I'm going to go talk with grandma. And they kind of allude to the fact that she doesn't talk to anybody. And he says, I'll just be patient and sit with her until she talks. And then they just show a quick glimpse of them sitting in front of the window as he waits patiently. And that's it. We would have gotten the whole concept, because they never show what she tells him anyway, which is kind of, to me, that would have been a pivotal moment to see how she conversed that. And instead, we get all the buildup without the payoff, except for in reference to what he found out.
Yeah, they could have like paid it off a little differently, set it up like you said, and then we see the payoff, where instead of exactly. building up the character moment and he's doing the reveal, but we don't actually get to see her reveal.
Right.
Yeah.
So again, let's talk about our ratings.
Okay.
Exactly. So let's talk about our ratings. What did you rate the film?
So I have a out of 5, and I gave it a good 3.5-4 stars. Because again, like I said, I enjoyed it. There was some pacing issues, but I enjoy it. And I think if it's a film that I enjoy, and if it has good eye candy, Chris Evans, but you know, I mean, it's always going to go a little bit higher.
I also gave it 3.5 out of 5. Again, just for pacing reasons. The only eye candy was for me was just, you know, the talent, right? All-star cast.
Oh yeah, absolutely. You know, I mean, it is definitely a joke, but okay, not going to lie. Growing up, I kind of had a Jamie Lee Curtis was an actress who I've always admired, always just have thought the world of. And just seeing her in this was so fun. And so that's why, yeah. So that's, you know, girl crush there, because she's awesome.
Yeah.
Sorry, random.
So stingers during or after the credits, there are none. There's a few bit of hand-drawn pictures, but pictures that are done for each character that are done pretty well. But other than that, if you want to leave during the credits, you can.
Yeah. To stay for the pictures, though. Definitely stay for the pictures. Because it's the hand-drawn art of the cast members as their characters. It was fun.
Exactly. All right. Well, this concludes our review of Knives Out. Tammy, anything out there that you want to promote for yourself? Anything that people can watch or follow you on?
I'm in the middle of a rebranding of my channel, but if I come back, I will let you know. But you can always follow me on Instagram, Tammy Makes Movies, Tammy's Journey Through Life. That's my main Instagram.
So make sure you follow her. If you're interested, follow Tammy on there. As always, everyone, I want to thank you all for taking the time to listen. If you are a first-time listener, you can follow us and subscribe through Facebook. That's www.facebook.com/.onthespotmoviereviews. That's all run together, no spaces or dashes in that. You can also find us on Anchor. That's anchor.fm/.onthespot. It's through Anchor that we're available on Google Podcasts, Spotify, Breaker, you name it, we're probably on it. And we thank Anchor for doing that for us. So this is another review in the can. And until next time, grab some popcorn and your favorite drink and go out and see a great film with your family, your friends, or just spend some time to yourself. But most importantly, have a great night.